Chapter 85. In the dark, Sean walked with Dirk down the lane to the stables. The clouds banked along the escarpment were fired red by the hidden sun, and the wind fretted through the plantations so that the wattle moaned and shook.
"North wind," grunted Sean. "It'll rain before nightfall."
"Sundancer loves the rain," Dirk answered him tensely, and Sean glanced at him.
"Dirk, if you lose today," he started, but Dirk cut him short.
"I won't lose," and again as though it were a vow.
"I won't lose."
"If you would only show as much determination in other things, the more important..."
"Important, Pa, this is important. This is the most important thing I've ever done."
Dirk stopped and turned to his father. He caught Sean's sleeve, clinging to him.
"Pa, I'm doing this for you, Pa."
Sean looked down, and what he saw in his son's face, in that beautiful face, silenced the retort that he was about to make. "Where did I go wrong with you?" he asked himself, with love stained by loathing.
"Where did you get this blood? Why are you this way?" demanded his pride and his contempt.
"Thanks," he said, dryly, freed his arm and walked on towards the stables. Sightless in his deep preoccupation with Dirk, Sean was into the stable yard before he noticed Mbijani.
"Ngosi, I see you."
Mbijani rose solemnly from the hand-carved stool on which he sat.
"I see you also," Sean cried with pleasure, and then controlled himself. A display of emotion in front of lesser persons would embarrass Mbijani.
"You are well?" he asked gravely, and restrained the desire to prod the swelling dignity of Mbijani's stomach, reminding himself that Mbijani's abundant flesh and fat had been carefully cultivated as a sign to the rest of the world of his prosperity.
"I am well," Mbijani assured him.
"That you have come gives me great pleasure."
"Nkosi, on a day of importance, it is right that we should be together, as it was before."
And Mbijani allowed himself to smile for the first time, a smile that within seconds became a mischievous grin that Sean gave back to him. He should have guessed that Mbijani would never miss a fight, or a hunt, or a contest. Then Mbijani turned to Dirk.
"Do us honour today," he commanded, as though he spoke to one of his own sons. "Your father and I will be watching you."
He placed a huge black hand upon Dirk's shoulder, as though in benediction. Then he turned to gesture with his fly-whisk at the stable boys waiting behind him.
"Bring the horse."
Two of them led her out, her hooves ringing on the paving of the yard as she danced a little. Head up, moving, greyhound-bellied, pricking her ears forward and back, she saw Dirk and wrinkled the soft velvet of her nostrils as she whickered.
"Hey, girl,"
Dirk walked towards her. At his approach she rolled her eyes until the whites showed, and her small dainty ears flattened wickedly against her neck.
"Stop that nonsense," Dirk admonished,
and she bared yellow teeth menacingly and reached with her slender snake-like neck. He put out his hand to her, and she took his fingers between those terrible teeth and nibbled them tenderly. Then, finished with pretense, she snorted, pricked her ears, and nuzzled his chest and neck.
"Where's her blanket? Has she eaten? Put the saddle and bridle in the car."
Dirk snapped a chain of questions and instructions at the stable boys as he caressed Sundancer's face with the gentle hands of a lover. So many contradictions in one person. Sean watched his son with sadness heavy upon him, oppressive as this red dawn.
"Where did I go wrong?" "Ngosi, I will walk down with the horse,"
Mbijani sensed his mood and sought to end it.
"Better that a man of your station should ride with me in the motor car,"
Sean demurred, and took a fiendish pleasure in the shifty glance that Mbijani cast at the great gleaming Rolls parked at the far end of the yard.
"It has eyes like a monster," thought Mbijani, and looked quickly away. "I will walk with the horse and see that it comes to no harm," he announced.
"As you wish," Sean agreed.
The small procession set off towards Ladyburg, the two grooms leading Sundancer in her red tartan blanket, and Mbijani following sedately with his small black sons carrying his carved stool and his spears behind him. 2 hours later, Sean drove the Rolls into the field behind the stockyards. Staring straight ahead, both hands gripping the wheel so that the knuckles of his hands gleamed white, Sean did not hear the shouted greetings nor see the gala crowds and the bunting until the rolls bumped to a halt in the grass and his hands unfroze slowly from the wheel. Then he exhaled gently, and the rigid muscles of his face softened into a grin of uncertain triumph.
"Well, we made it," he spoke as if he were not quite certain.
"You did very well, my dear." Ruth's voice was also a little scratchy, and she relaxed her protective hold on Storm.
"You should let me drive, Pa."
Dirk was lounging against the saddlery on the back seat. Sean turned furiously upon him, but Dirk was too quick. He flung open the door and was absorbed into the crowd that had gathered around the rolls before Sean could assemble his words. Sean glowered after him.
"Hello, Sean, nice to see you."
Dennis Peterson had opened the door at his elbow, and Sean hastily rearranged his features into a smile.
"Hello, Dennis. Nice turnout."
"Everybody in the district," Dennis assured him, as they shook hands, and then looked with satisfaction around the field. There were at least 50 carriages parked haphazard along the stockyard fence. An open wagon had been arranged as a refreshment stall, with silver urns of coffee and piles of cakes laid out upon it. A dogfight was in progress near the gate, while small boys, in already wilted church clothes, shrieked and whooped and chased each other through the crowd.
"Who's responsible for the decorations?" Sean asked, surveying the flags and bunting that fluttered from the poles that marked the finishing line and from the wide roped-off lane that led up to them.
"The board. We voted it last week."
"Very nice."
Sean was looking now at the stock pen, where the horses were. A solid barricade of humanity lined the railings. But he saw Dirk climb over and jump down beside Sundancer amid a splatter of applause from the onlookers.
"Good-looking lad."
Dennis was watching Dirk also, but there was something in his tone that added, "But I'm glad he's not mine."
"Thanks."
The defiance in Sean's voice was not lost on Dennis, and he smiled ironically.
"We better go across and talk to the other judges. Garrick is waiting."
Dennis jerked his head towards the carriage at the end of the line. And although he had been painfully aware of it, Sean looked at it for the first time. Together with Pye, Erasmus, and his father, Michael was standing beside it watching them. Tall and lean in tight black riding boots, and an open shirt of white silk accentuating the breadth of his shoulders, he leaned against the wheel. Above him, Ada and Anna sat together on the rear seat. And suddenly Sean felt a twist of anger in his stomach that Ada should be there with them.
"Mother," he greeted her without smiling.
"Hello, Sean." And he could not fathom the tone of her voice, nor her expression. Was it regret, or perhaps a reluctant rejection? For a long minute they held each other's eyes, until at last Sean had to break, because now, instead of anger, he felt guilty. But he did not understand the source of his guilt. It was only the sorrowful accusation in Ada's eyes that had given it to him.
"Anna," he greeted her,
and received in exchange a stiff nod.
"Gary,"
Sean tried to smile. He made a movement to lift his right hand, but as he did so he knew it would be rejected, for the same accusation that he had seen in Ada's eyes was also in Gary's. He turned with relief to Michael.
"Hello, Mike. You know you're going to get the pants thrashed off you, don't you?
I'm going to make you eat those words without salt."
And they laughed together, easily, laughed with such obvious joy in each other that Anna moved restlessly in her seat and spoke sharply.
"Can't we get it over with, Ronnie?"
"Yes,"
Ronnie Pye agreed hastily.
"Well then, where is young Dirk? We better go and find him."
In a group they left the women and moved through the crowd towards the stock pen where Dirk stood laughing with two girls that Sean recognised as daughters of one of the factory foremen. They were both looking up at Dirk, and reacting with such unashamed adoration that Sean felt a little lift of indulgent pride. Casually, Dirk dismissed the girls and came across to meet them.
"All set, Pa."
"Yes, so I see,"
Sean gruffed, and waited for Dirk to show courtesy to the men with him. But Dirk ignored them, and spoke only to Ronnie Pye.
"Well, let's hear it."
"Well, then, a contest between Gary Courtney's colt, Greyweather, and Sean Courtney's Philly Sundancer. An honour match with no stake put up by the owners. Agreed?"
"Right,"
said Sean. Gary opened his mouth, and then closed it firmly, and nodded. He was sweating a little. He unfolded the handkerchief in his hand and wiped his forehead.
The distance approximately 5 miles around Four Points, the points being firstly the posts that have been erected on this field, secondly the northeastern boundary marker of the farm Tunis Kraal,
Ronnie pointed at the crest of the escarpment that stood above them, its slope golden with grass in the morning sun, and smeared with streaks of dark green bush.
Thirdly, the number 3 dip tank of Mchubuk's Kloof Farm, which you can't see from here as it is behind those trees.
Ronnie's arm described a long arc along the crest of the escarpment, and stopped pointing at the spires of a clump of Seligna gums.
But both of you know it?
Sure, agreed Dirk,
and Michael nodded.
The fourth and finishing point is the same as the starting point. Here.
He jerked his thumb at the two posts that fluttered gay with flags.
Stewards have been posted at the Tunis Kraal boundary and the dip tank. Make sure you pass on the far side of them. The judges are Messrs. Peterson, Erasmus and myself. All and any dispute regarding the running or interpretation of the rules will be decided by us.
Ronnie went on talking, and Sean felt his excitement mounting from his stomach and beginning to tingle along his forearms. It was taking a hold on all of them now. Even Ronnie's voice had an edge to it. Though Sean did not understand that the fox-like eagerness of his face came from the knowledge that this was a contest in which he stood to gain more than any of them. But Garrick understood fully, and his eyes watched Ronnie's lips hypnotically.
"Oh, that's it, then,"
Ronnie finished, and then to the riders.
"Well, get saddled up and bring your horses to the start."
The judges walked away and left the four Courtneys standing together.
"Sean,"
Gary spoke first. His eyes were stricken.
I think you should know..." But he did not finish.
"What?" Sean asked abruptly. And at the tone of his voice, Garrick straightened up. The thing in his eyes changed shape and became what Sean had never expected to see there. Pride.
"It doesn't matter."
Gary turned away and walked purposefully towards his horse. And there was a spring in his stride and a set to his shoulders.
"Good luck, Mike,"
Sean punched his arm.
"And the same to you,"
Michael started after Garrick, then stopped and turned back to Sean.
"Whatever anyone else says, Sean, I know you didn't plan this."
Then he was striding away.
"What the hell did he mean by that?"
puzzled Sean. But Dirk cut into his thoughts.
"Why did you have to do that, Pa?"
he demanded.
What?
Sean looked at him uncomprehendingly.
"Give him luck. Why did you have to give him luck? I'm riding for you, not him. I'm your son, not him."
The two riders moved together towards the start, and buzzing with excitement, the crowd went with them. Sean walked beside Sundancer with Dirk leaning attentively from the saddle to listen to him.
"Take her gently to the swamp. Don't push her, for she'll need all her steam in the mud. Michael will gain there. That colt is strong in the leg, but heavy. Follow him and let him break a path for you. Out of the swamp you can catch up and pass him on the slope. Push hard there. You must lead him to the top and hold your lead along the crest to the dip tank."
"All right, Pa."
"Now, when you start down again, keep well out beyond the Van Essen plantation, onto the hard ground. That way you can cut the edge of the swamp. My guess is that Michael comes straight down and plough through the middle. But you must take the longer route, and use Sundancer's speed against Greyweather's strength."
They had reached the starting posts, and the crowd scattered and spread away to line the ropes. An open funnel of humanity faced the two horsemen. Then the swamp with its deceptively lush papyrus grass concealing the glutinous mudholes. Beyond it, the great saw of the escarpment. A long course, a hard course.
"Are both of you ready?"
called Ronnie Pye from the sidelines.
"Clear the field, please, Sean."
Sean put his hand on Dirk's knee.
"Well, let's see what you can do, boy."
Then he ducked under the ropes into the crowd. Sundancer was skittering nervously, coming up on her back legs and throwing her head so that the mane flew red-gold in the sunlight. She was sweating in dark patches on her shoulders. Michael was circling Greyweather, keeping him moving gently
leaning forward and patting his neck, talking to him, so that he switched his ears, cocking them half back to listen.
"Quiet, please, everybody!"
Dennis was using a megaphone, and the buzz of voices descended into an expectant hush.
"You're under starter's orders now,"
he shouted at the riders.
"Turn wide and walk up together."
They swung away from the posts and came together. Dirk touched Sundancer with the spur, and she jumped back, thrusting her quarters into Michael's leg.
"Keep your bloody animal under control," he snarled at Michael. "Don't crowd me."
"Are you nervous, Dirkie?" Obediently, Michael wheeled his mount aside.
"Damn you! I'll show you who's nervous!"
And Sundancer threw her head in protest, and Dirk sawed her with the curb.
"Come round! Swing them round!"
Dennis's voice through the megaphone boomed distortedly. They turned in line and started walking up, 20 paces from the start. Two horses with the sunlight glowing on their polished skins, pale gold and dark red. The crowd sighed softly, like wind in the grass. 10 paces and Sundancer was pushing forward, lengthening her stride, crabbing a little.
"Hold your line! Keep together!"
Dennis cautioned them, and Dirk yanked her back roughly. The rims of his nostrils were flared and white with tension. Michael moved up beside him, holding his hands low, the big red colt stepping high in the exaggerated action of an animal under restraint. Quickening together over the last 5 paces, their riders hunching low in the saddles, they came to the posts.
"Go!"
bellowed Dennis.
And "Go! Go!" roared 100 voices.
Still in line, matching each other's stride, they changed from a walk into an easy, free, swinging canter. Both Dirk and Michael rising slightly in their stirrups to hold them from headlong flight. Half a mile ahead lay the swamp, and beyond it 5 miles of mountain and rough, rocky ground, of donga and thornbush. They cantered down between the yelling lines and out of the funnel into the open. The crowd broke and scattered to various points of vantage, and Sean ran with them, unslinging his binocular case, chuckling with excitement in the general confusion of shouts and laughter. Ruth was waiting for him beside the rolls, and he caught her around the waist and lifted her onto the bonnet. "Sean, you'll scratch the paintwork," she protested, as she clutched at her hat and teetered dangerously on the high, round bonnet.
"Oh, the hell with the paintwork,"
he laughed, as he climbed up beside her, and she clung to him for support.
"There they are!"
Far out across the field, the two horses ran down towards the bright green of the swamp. Sean lifted and focused his binoculars, and suddenly they were so close he expected to hear the drumming of the hooves. Grey Weather was pulling ahead, forcing powerfully with his great shoulders lunging into each stride, and Sundancer trailed him with her neck arched against the pressure of the bit. On her back, Dirk sat upright with his elbows pressed into his flanks as he held her.
"Well, the little bugger is listening to advice," Sean growled. "I quite expected him to be using the whip already."
Across the distance that separated them, Sean could feel as a tangible thing Dirk's determination to win. He could see it in the way he held his shoulders. He could see it in the rigid lines of his arms. But what he did not see were the harsh lines of hatred in Dirk's face as he stared at Michael's back ahead of him. The beat of hooves changed its tone, no longer ringing on hard ground, but dulling as they reached the swamp. Now lumps of damp clay flew from Grey Weather's hooves, and a piece hit Dirk's chest and sprayed dirt on the white silk of his shirt. Sundancer's gait altered as she felt the soft ground.
"Easy, girl. Hey there, girl," Dirk whispered, and held her firmly with his knees to give her confidence.
The grass brushed his stirrups, and ahead of him Grey Weather splashed into the first mudhole, plunged through it and into the swamp proper. The tall papyrus engulfed him.
"Ah, the old man was right," Dirk smiled for the first time.
Michael was forcing a path through the reeds, flattening them for Dirk to follow with half the effort. Twice Grey Weather sunk to his belly in potholes of black glue, rearing and struggling to free himself while Dirk skirted them. Both horses were shiny with mud, and their riders were soaked to the waist and splattered above. The swamp stank like an animal cage, and marsh gas erupted sullenly as they disturbed it. Clouds of insects rose about them. A sakabula bird fled shrieking as they ploughed through the papyrus. One of the razor leaves lashed Michael's cheek, and a thread of blood ran down his jaw, washing the blobs of mud with it, and dripped onto his shirt. Then suddenly the ground firmed under them. The solid papyrus broke into clumps, thinned, and was left behind, and Greyweather led them out onto the first slope of the escarpment. He was running heavily now and grunting with each stride, while Sundancer moved up beside him. "You're finished!" Dirk shouted at Michael as they drew level. "I'll see you at the finish line!" And he leaned forward in the saddle and gave Sundancer the spurs and the whip together. Without pressing his horse, Michael angled him off towards the right, letting him move under slack rein to pick his own way, and he began the first leg of a series of zigzags that would take him to the top. On the steep ground below the crest, Dirk used the whip incessantly, and Sundancer went up in a series of scrambling leaps, with the loose rock rolling under her hooves. The sweat had washed away the mud from her shoulders, and she landed with less control at each jump. "Pull, you bitch, pull!" Dirk shouted at her, and looked back in agony at Michael's sedate ascent. He was 200 yards below and coming steadily. Dirk's movement caught Sundancer off balance, and she landed awkwardly at the next jump. Her hooves scrabbled, and she started to fall. Dirk kicked his feet from the stirrups and jumped with the reins still in his hands. The instant he landed, he leaned back on the reins to hold her. But she was down on her knees now, sliding back, and she pulled Dirk down with her onto the level place below. They struggled together, and when at last he got her on her feet, she was trembling with terror. Dust and pieces of dry grass coated her muddy legs.
Damn you, you clumsy bitch!" whispered Dirk, as he ran his hands over her hocks to check for damage.
He glanced back at Michael, and found him much closer now.
"Oh, God!"
he blurted, snatched up Sundancer's reins, and ran at the slope, dragging her after him. Dirk came out on the crest with sweat pouring down his face and soaking through his shirt. Saliva had dried to a thick, gummy froth in his mouth, and he was panting harshly. But he had held on to his lead, and Sundancer was over her trembling fit. She had recovered sufficiently to cavort a little as he mounted.
"This way, Dirkie!"
The two stewards standing on the pile of stones that marked the Tunis Kraal boundary were waving and shouting wild encouragement. Dirk clouted the spurs into her and was off again, galloping along the ridge, sweeping past them and on towards the clump of gums 3 miles ahead.
"Catch him, Mike! Ride, man, ride!"
faint shouts behind him, and Dirk knew without looking back that Mike had reached the top and was chasing him. He rode on, grimly mourning the time lost on the ascent, and hating both Sundancer and Michael for it. At this point, he should have led by 400 yards, not 50. Directly ahead now was the gorge through which the Babuenstrom dropped down the escarpment, its side choked with dark green river-bush. Dirk found the path and turned away from the skyline, aiming upstream at the ford. Without grass to muffle them, Sundancer's hooves hammered in staccato rhythm on the hard-packed earth of the path. But also he could hear behind him, like an echo, the beat of other hooves. Michael was onto the path behind him. Dirk looked back under his own arm. Michael was so close that he could see the laughter lines creasing the corners of his mouth, and the mockery inflamed him.
"I'll show him."
And Dirk started with the whip again, cracking it across Sundancer's flanks and shoulders so that she jumped forward with a new urgency. Down the steep bank of the river and out onto the white sandbank, he plunged with Greyweather's nose drawing level with his boot. Into the dark green water they rode abreast, throwing up a veil of spray that sparkled in the sunlight, slipping from their saddles to swim beside the horses through the deep, while the current moved them towards the falls. Up into the saddles again, the instant the horses found the bottom and splashed towards the far bank. Out onto the sand, with water streaming from sodden clothing, shouting with excitement as they raced for the narrow path that climbed the far bank. First man onto it would hold the advantage.
Give way, I'm leading, give me way," screamed Dirk furiously.
"Make your own way," Michael laughed back at him.
"You bastard!"
Dirk used his knees and reins to thrust Sundancer's shoulder into Michael, trying to force him clear.
"None of that," Michael warned him. "You bastard, I'll show you."
They rode knee to knee. Dirk sat up quickly and twisted his foot, placing his booted toe under Michael's instep. With a sudden vicious lift of his leg, he slipped Michael's foot from the stirrup and threw him sideways. As he felt himself going over, Michael clutched desperately at the pommel, pulling the saddle with him so it slid onto Greyweather's flank, and the shift of weight forced the horse to disengage and slew away from the path. Michael went down onto his shoulder into the sand and rolled with his knees drawn up against his stomach. "That's for you," Dirk yelled in defiance, as he went up the bank and out into the open veld again. Behind him in the riverbed, Michael staggered to his feet, his wet clothing coated white with sand, and ran after Greyweather, who was trotting back towards the water with the saddle hanging under his chest. "The dirty little swine! My God, if only Sean knew!" Michael caught the horse before it started to drink, wrestled the saddle onto his back again, and clinched the girth. "Now I can't let him win." He jumped up onto Greyweather and booted him towards the bank. "I can't let him win." 200 yards ahead, Dirk's shirt was a white blob against the brown grass. As he rounded the dip tank and pointed Sundancer's head at the ridge for the last leg, one of the stewards shouted, "What happened to Michael?" "He fell in the river," Dirk called back. "He's finished." And his voice rang with triumph. "He's leading. Dirk's leading." Sean stood on the rolls with his glasses trained on the clump of gum trees, and now he was the first to spot the tiny figure of the horseman as it showed on the crest of the escarpment. "Where's Michael?" Ruth asked. "He can't be far behind," Sean muttered and waited anxiously for him to appear. He had fretted while he watched Dirk's reckless ascent of the slope and cursed him loudly for his brutal treatment of Sundancer. Then he had entreated him to get a bloody move on during the run along the ridge, with Michael gaining steadily on him. When the two horsemen had veered away from the skyline to cross the Babuenstrom, they had disappeared from view, and this was the first glimpse the spectators had received of either competitor since that moment. "The little idiot's riding too wide. I told him to cut the edge of the swamp, not ride round it altogether." "Where's Michael?" Ruth repeated. Sean swung the glasses back and scanned the crest with the first twinges of concern. "Not showing yet. He must have run into trouble." "Do you think he's all right? Has he been hurt?"
"Well, how should I know?"
Sean's anxiety made him irritable, but immediately he was penitent and encircled Ruth's waist with his arm.
"He can look after himself, that one. No sense in fussing about him."
Dirk was well down the slope now, leaving a thin trail of dust, for Sundancer skidded on her haunches most of the way. "Still no sign of Michael." Ruth moved restlessly against him.
"No, not yet," Sean grunted.
"Dirk can afford to miss the swamp. He's leading by a quarter of a mile." Suddenly a sigh of relief moved the crowd like a gust of wind through a field of wheat.
"There he is. He's coming straight down the slope. He can't make it unless he flies."
Sean swung his glasses from Dirk to Michael and back, estimating their speeds and positions, allowing for Michael's delay in the swamp, but setting against that the additional distance that Dirk had to cover.
"It's going to be close," he decided aloud. "Dirk's got the edge, but it's going to be very close."
Ada did not see it that way. Dirk was leading, and Dirk was going to win. She looked across at Garrick. He stood beside the finishing post 100 yards away. But even at that distance there was no mistaking the droop of his shoulders and the air of misery that surrounded him like an aura of defeat. Sundancer's hooves were slashing his life to threads. Unable to bear it a moment longer, Ada jumped down from the carriage and ran through the crowd to where Sean stood like a triumphant colossus on the bonnet of the rolls. "Sean," she reached up and touched his leg. But he was so engrossed he did not feel or hear her. "Sean," she shouted and tugged at his trouser leg.
"Mother,"
he turned vaguely to look down at her.
"I must talk to you,"
Ada shouted above the sound of the crowd that was rising with excitement.
"Oh, not now. They're coming into the finish. Climb up here where you can see it. Now. I must speak to you. Now. Come down this instant."
Her tone shocked him. For a second he wavered and peered furtively back at the race. Then he shrugged with resignation and jumped down beside her.
"What is it? Please be quick. I don't want to miss—"
"I'll be quick." Sean had never seen such a cold fury on her before. "I wanted to say that I never thought I'd see that day, when I had nothing left for you but contempt. Thoughtless you've been often, but never downright merciless."
"Mother, I—"
He was bewildered. "Listen to me. You set out to destroy your brother, and you've done it. Well, I hope you've had pleasure of it. You've got Tunis Kraal now.
Enjoy it, Sean. Sleep well at night.
Tunis Kral, what do you mean? He shouted at her now in confusion. I didn't wager for the farm.
Oh, no, Ada scoffed at him. Of course you didn't. You let Ronnie Pye do that for you.
Pye? Well, what has he got to do with it?
Everything. He helped you plan it. He helped you provoke Gary into this stupidity. He holds the mortgage on Tunis Kral.
But...
Slowly, the enormity of it all began to shape up in Sean's mind.
You took his leg. Now take Tunis Kral, but pay for it with my love.
She looked steadily into his eyes, but the pain was there, clouding her own.
Goodbye, Sean. We won't speak to each other again.
And she walked slowly away. She walked like an old woman at last, a tired and worn old woman. Sean understood, and began to run towards the finishing line. He drove through the crowd like a shark through a shoal of sardines. Over their heads he saw the two horsemen galloping in across the field. Dirk was leading, standing in the stirrups to thrash Sundancer with the whip. His black hair fluttered in the wind, and his shirt filthy with thrown mud. Under him the filly danced on flying hooves, and the beat of them drummed above the rising roar of the crowd. Her body was black and shiny with sweat, and froth flew from her gaping pink mouth to form white lace on her chest and flanks. 50 hopeless yards behind her plunged the colt with Michael flogging his heels into him with despair. Michael's face was twisted in an agony of frustration. Grey Weather was finished, his legs loose with exhaustion and his breath sawing hoarsely with each stride. Sean tore his way through the press of bodies that lined the guide ropes. He reached the front rank and shouldered two women from his path. Then he stooped and ducked under the rope into the open. Sundancer was almost up to him, hammering down in a crescendo of hooves, her head nodding with each stride.
"Dirk! Stop her!"
Sean roared.
"Pa! Pa, get out of the way!" Dirk screamed back at him, but Sean sprang to intercept him.
"Pa!"
Sean was in front of him, crouching with arms extended. Too close to swing Sundancer's head away from him, too late to stop her charge.
"Jump, girl, jump!" shouted Dirk,
and gathered the horse with his knees, feeling her respond with a bunching of her quarters, feeling her lift her forelegs against her chest and drive upwards in a high parabola. But sensing also the sluggishness of her exhausted body, and knowing she had not gone high enough to clear Sean's head. An aching moment as Sundancer lifted clear of the ground. The horrified groan of the crowd as her forelegs smashed into Sean, and she twisted in the air, falling. Dirk thrown, his stirrup leathers parting like whip cracks, then all of them down together in the grass. Shrill screams of women in the crowd. Sundancer struggling up again, with a foreleg swinging loosely from the knee, whinnying in the pain of broken bone. Sean on his back, his head twisted to the side, and blood from his torn cheek dribbling into his nose and mouth, so that his breathing snored hoarsely. Dirk, with the skin smeared from elbows and one cheek, crawling towards Sean, kneeling beside him, raising both hands clenched, hammering down with them so that his fists splattered the blood, beating them into the chest and slack, unconscious face of his father.
"Why did you? Oh, God, I hate you!"
Shock and fury and despair.
"For you! You stopped me! You stopped me!"
Michael dragging Grey Weather down on his haunches, flinging from the saddle, running to them, holding Dirk's arms, dragging him off, fighting him.
"Leave him, you little bastard! He didn't want me to! He stopped me! I hate him! I'll kill him!"
The crowd surging forward, flattening the guide ropes, two men helping Michael hold Dirk, the rest of them wringing Sean's body. The cries and questions.
"Where's Doc Fraser? Jesus, he's badly hurt. Catch that horse. Get a gun. What about the bets? Don't touch him. Wait. Got to straighten his arm. Get a gun. For Christ's sake, get a gun."
Then a new silence on them, their ranks opening quietly, and Ruth coming in through to him, running, in Bajani behind her.
"Sean."
She knelt beside him, clumsy in her pregnancy.
"Sean,"
she began again, and the men about her could not look at her face.
"Imbijani,
bring him to the car," she whispered. He slipped the monkey-skin cloak from his shoulder and let it drop, stooped over Sean and lifted him. The great black muscles of his chest and arms swelled, and he stood with his legs braced wide against the weight. His arm, Inkosikasi. She arranged the hanging arm comfortably across his chest. Bring him, she repeated. And together they walked through the crowd. Sean's head lolled against Mbijani's shoulder, like that of a sleeping child. Mbijani laid Sean gently on the back seat with his head in Ruth's lap. My daddy, she kept repeating, her face screwed up with horror at the blood and her tiny body trembling like that of a frightened rabbit. Will you drive us, please, Michael? Ruth looked up at him as he stood beside the rolls. Take us to Protea Street. With Mbijani loping alongside, the big car bumped across the field through the throng of anxious watchers, then swung onto the main road and moved away towards Ladyburg.